Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers? What the fuck, buddies? What the fuck, Nicks? What's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. If you're new here, have a seat or don't. Keep running. Whatever you got to do. Whatever you're doing. What are you doing? What are you doing? What are you doing with your life? What is it? Hey, I was in New York for the last few days. I want to thank everybody who got out there in the streets and raged on behalf of the open heart, the tolerant, the welcoming, the embracing, the democratic, the persons that see other people as people and pushed back on this fascist shit show. What a fucking, it's not even the sad parade of tanks, but it's the force at which the cops and the secret police are operating out there in the streets against people that just want to live. That just want to live free lives. It's a fucking nightmare. It's an authoritarian clusterfuck. Secret police out there in their black cars. God damn it. Thank you. Thank you, all decent citizens of a once, you know, at least evolving democracy, pushing back on this very authoritarian new America. Thank you. I'm thanking you. I will do my part the best I can. Fuck fascism, right? Am I right? Kristen Milioti is here. I've seen her in a lot of stuff. The Sopranos, The Wolf of Wall Street, Palm Springs. She's also been on the shows How I Met Your Mother and Made for Love, which you can't even find anymore. She won the Critics' Choice Award for Best Actress in a Limited Series for her performance in The Penguin. And she's an astounding actress. She's great. I'd never fully noticed her before until I'm watching this fucking show, The Penguin, which is not really the kind of show I would watch, but I got locked in because I wanted to see what Colin Farrell was doing. Then Kristen was like, holy fuck, force of nature, how are you? So she's on the show today, which I find very exciting. It was great to meet her. Also, last week, I talked a bit about an article written by Diana Moskovitz for Defector called There Will Never Be Another WTF with Mark Maron. Now, look, I thought it was a great article, not just because it was about me, because it was well-written and her personal experience with this show was moving. And Diana was gracious enough to do a recording of that piece for us. And we played it in full for full Maron subscribers on last Friday's bonus show. But here's a bit of it right now.
If WTF had its own philosophy of life, it would go more or less like this. You will start out young and filled with righteous anger at how unfair the world is. You will try many things, and you will probably fail at them. But that's okay. Everyone fails. And everyone is hiding shame they believe nobody else will understand. Everyone gets at least a few bad breaks, and some more than a few. But if you hang in there, at some point, you will cease to fail. At some point, you will get a lucky break. At some point, you will look around and realize that while this might not be the life you envisioned, it's still a good life, and one you can be proud of. You will fuck up, and you know what you should do after? Fucking apologize. And then at some point, after that, you will get older and wiser, and realize that your apprehension about Sir Ian McKellen was ridiculous.
You can hear that full recording with a full Maron subscription. Just sign up for that by going to the link in the episode description, and you can read the full piece at defector.com. A couple other bits of business. Look, you know, as we head into the home stretch in the next few months, if you're not following me on Instagram, go ahead and do that. I am toying with the idea and leaning towards continuing doing the weekly updates that I mail out I believe you can get on that mailing list somewhere at WTFpod.com. But people seem to like those. People come up to me and go, are you still going to do the updates? Are you still going to do the dispatches? Sure. Why not? Keeps me writing, keeps me engaged. But I was in New York and I had a good trip. I had a very nice trip. And I have to be honest with you, I love doing Jimmy Fallon show, all right? Being a panel guest was such an important part of my life for so long when I was coming up. I used to do Conan all the time, and I talked to him when I was in New York. He happened to be up at Sirius, and he was finishing up an interview with Bob Odenkirk, and he said, come on in, let's knock one out, so I did. But, I mean, just being a guy on panel, like, you know, Richard Lewis or like Jay Leno on Letterman, it was a very important and very thrilling thing for me, and I hardly do it anymore. So look, I'm not talking about being a guest on a podcast. There is a specific thing. I'm talking about being a guest on The Tonight Show. And look, I know it doesn't mean what it used to, and the media landscape is a scattered shit show, but the context is still what it is. Okay. And you go out there, there's a way to do it. Some of it's riffing, some of it's, you know, stuff you prepared. But I'm telling you, man, Jimmy is a good host. I don't know what you think of him. I don't care really. He's a great audience. He's excited. He likes when you throw him curveballs. And I was out there and we were going at it and I was riffing a bit. And he's just a good audience of one. And his audience is good. He's fully engaged in the thing. And it just makes it a fucking blast. So I enjoyed that. You can watch that somewhere, the Fallon appearance. It's out there. And also, I was there to screen the documentary, Are We Good? And I do have to admit that it was screening on Saturday. That was the day of the protests. And so I was getting ready to go to a theater to watch a movie about me while all you good people who went out into the streets and raged against the machine of fascism with open hearts and tolerance and decency, I was in a room full of people watching a movie about me. And I know some of you are like, well, yeah, that adds up, Mark. But my heart was with you, and it's with you now, and I'll be out at the next one. I promise there will be a next one. But the screening of the documentary, it went very well. It was only the second time I'd seen it in front of an audience, and it was great. I mean, it was really great. It moved me because there's a lot of stuff with Lynn in there. There's a lot of stuff that really got me squirting out a few tears and feeling the feels again. And when something goes well, it's funny to me, when something goes well, it means it got laughs in the funny places and it got feels in the feely places. And it just really played well. And I want to thank everyone who came out for that. It was a great night. And then after the screening, Tracy Letts, who is my friend, moderated a conversation with me and Steve FineArts, the director. And that was also pretty fucking amazing. I mean, talking to Tracy in any situation is amazing for me. And to be honest with you, I didn't know where he was going to go with the questions, but he had kind of a totally unique point of view about, you know, what the film was about. So the assumption, and it wouldn't be a wrong one, is that it's about processing grief. It is that. Me processing grief, which includes me trying to figure out how to do comedy about it, right? So Tracy, when he saw it that night, he thought the film was about work, about the work of an artist. Now, I rarely call myself that, and you guys know that, and I rarely see myself that way. I guess I know I am one, but it seems to be pretentious to call myself one. I've always felt that, you know, throughout my life. I'd rather just go with a comic. But looking at the film as a film about work was helpful to me in reframing my life a little bit, because I'm watching my life unfold in bits and pieces over the course of 3 years in this film. And my work is really how I process everything. This conversation right now being part of that, whether it's on the podcast or it's on the stage, my life, certainly up to this point, has been about processing it through my work. And the work is kind of my life, to the point where I don't really live a full life. I mean, there are other reasons for that, but those are also what I process in the work. The other reasons, the reasons why I don't live a full life. And I just put it all out there. And I just kind of had this weird realization. It's like the reality of my life is sort of like a panicky farce. And the work that I do gives it definition, and it attempts to make it relatable as I work it out, to make it real for me and for the audience, and just to put it out there. Does that make sense? But all this sharing of it is a bit depleting. I got to be honest with you, because the sharing of it is the work, and the work leaves me chronically exposed, and then I have to incorporate that into how I live. It starts eating itself, and it stagnates the life I'm living, and I'm running out of time, people. What am I trying to say? The only choice I have after 61 years of being alive is to accept what I've called a life and try to live it differently, if that will bring me some peace. Ease up on the panic, the compulsivity, the urgency, the anger. Find some space and be who I am now and see where that takes me creatively. I have no idea how to create outside of myself. I am the center and project of the creation. And I just feel like the space that I'm going to be afforded, you know, if I don't fall into a pit of me, it is an opportunity to start putting stuff together that doesn't rely entirely on my immediate reaction to whatever is happening right now in my life. I do not know if I have the discipline to do other things. I don't have much patience, and I don't always think in a fictional realm, but I think that's really some of where the next piece of me has to go creatively. Okay, let's bring it back down to earth. I would say, honestly, on some level, one of the high points, if not the high point of the trip, was going to the Museum of Natural History in New York City with Kit. She'd never been there, and I hadn't been there since I was a kid. So when we decided to go, I was like, we're going to see the blue whale. We're going to see the big blue whale. They have this giant life-size model of a blue whale. Hanging from the ceiling, and it's spectacular. I remember when I was a kid just waiting to walk into that room. Where's the room with the whale? It's a huge blue whale. And we're going through all the dioramas and the, you know, Asian history, African history, you know, Indian history, you know, a little bit of Armenia in there, all the outfits. And then we're going through the animals of Africa, all this stuffed, sad, you know, taxidermed animals. But Kit kept saying, look, it was a different time and they were doing it for research. It was still a little sad. And just all the work that goes into categorizing and researching and studying and putting everything together, the whole world, its peoples and its life forms, the years and years of exploration and excavation. It's all in this museum. And then I started to feel like this work is exactly the kind of work that this fascist culture wants to shut down, that this revisionary fucking shit show wants to erase all this stuff that was so important to define the world we live in and where we come from and all the different kinds of people and animals, is just the stuff that these entitled fucking morons want to disappear. Isn't that weird? I realize that there's an entitlement to stupidity. The entitlement of stupidity requires everyone just to be as stupid as you are. Because if everyone isn't, then it's a threat to you. And that is the most fucking malignant type of entitlement that there is. The entitlement of ignorance is a fucking human disaster, because it requires that everybody shut the fuck up and be just as ignorant as the entitled ignorance. Look, entitlement is annoying on any level, but this aggressive, entitled ignorance and stupidity, holy fuck. But anyways, I just had a great time at the museum. I mean, looking into that, I think they're called dioramas. The one, Noah Baumbach was affected by it as well. The squid, the giant squid attacking the sperm whale, because it's all dark in there and it's just one little exhibit. But man, it's haunting. And that vibe just shatters you when you're a kid. And I got in front of that thing and it was just as fucking terrifying. And it all came back to me. It was great. And then the dinosaur bones. The dinosaur bones. Oh my God, the big dinosaur bones. Kit's a dinosaur freak. And I'm, you know, you can't not just be, holy shit, holy fucking shit. The size of these things just wandering around, giant fucking lizards and sharks and fish and turtles, all kinds of stuff, pterodactyls. But there's like three huge halls of dinosaurs. And we were walking through one. I'm like, whoa, you know, that's big. That's cool. Holy shit. It's amazing that could fly. And I found myself, you know, just going to myself like, fuck, where are the triceratops? Where are the triceratops? And we go through one big room and it was awesome, but no triceratops. Then we get to another room. There's giant other things, skeletons. I'm looking around. These are fucking scary and cool. Where's the triceratops? And then finally in the third room, boom, boom, several triceratops heads and bodies. I guess like, and you know, I guess honestly, I am and always have been a triceratops guy. I don't know, you know, who you are or what your dinosaur was. I think I might have gone through a stegosaurus period, but very little head. And I like those other ones, the lizards with the big fan on the back. Those are cool. Never been a T-Rex guy, but pterodactyl a little bit. But really, when it comes right down to it, it's that triceratops. And then the one with the armor on it, the one that, you know, I guess was the great, 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 great granddaddy of the armadillos. But I'm a triceratops guy. Now you know that about me. Now you know. All right, look, you guys. Kristen Milioti is here, and she's great. The full series of The Penguin is streaming on Max, and go watch her other stuff, too. I mean, she's really a terrific actor, and this is me meeting her and talking to her.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
You play?
I don't play guitar, sadly.
No?
I wish I did. I've tried. I play piano, but I don't play guitar.
Are you good at piano?
I'm decent, but actually probably not anymore because I'm so out of practice. But there was a time in my life where I was decent.
Does it come right back to you?
No, because I don't, I can't read music.
Yeah.
So it's like I really have to sit with it for a while. But then sometimes it comes back. I had to like perform at a fundraiser a couple years ago.
Yeah.
And I had to like play in front of a giant room of people and I was so terrified. And I practiced for like 2 weeks and it came back.
Yeah.
And then I actually felt so, I was like, oh, I could live at a piano. It took me a second.
Doesn't it feel good?
To play and sing?
Yeah.
It's the best feeling on earth.
I know.
It's my number one favorite thing.
Isn't that weird that it wasn't necessarily what you pursued?
I know. Well, in a way, like a little bit. I mean, I was in this show for a long time. This is like when I think I was just about to go do it when we were at Sundance together.
I'm so mad. I didn't remember that.
You shouldn't be mad. I was really, it was like such a whirlwind. It was like 24
hours. What did
you
play in Sleepwalk with me?
His sister.
Wow.
Yeah. Two people you've never seen look less related. Like, oddly,
that's not true. His sister kind of looks like you.
Oh, really?
Well,
I feel
Mike's
like
does.
I'm so dark and he's like blue eyes.
No, his sister
and,
is like
wow,
that.
I didn't know
Gina.
That. Yeah.
Like I remember her from back in the day. But yeah, she definitely looks Italian.
Wow.
He does not.
Yeah, he doesn't.
So, okay, you played the sister and we were in Sundance.
Yes. And then right after that, I did this show for a year.
Was that the one with the music guy?
Yes.
Was that great?
It was great.
Once.
Yeah.
And you had to sing and do stuff?
Every night and play piano.
Wow.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, I play guitar and I never sought to do it professionally.
Yeah.
So like what I usually say is that means my guitars aren't sort of vessels of broken dreams.
Oh my God.
They're just,
yeah.
They're something I like doing.
Yeah. It's when I was practicing for that thing I was just talking about, that fundraiser or whatever, I was reminded when I had to play every day and sing and practice this song, I was like, oh my God, this makes me 500 times of a better person.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Like, why aren't I doing this every day?
Because it opens you up, right?
It opens you up.
There's a weird vulnerability to music.
Yeah.
That, you know, it took me years to be confident to sing in front of people.
Yeah.
But just to do it.
Yeah.
And to, like, I can't do it without getting emotional. For the first few times that I did it.
Yeah.
I'd cry.
Oh, my God. Because it is the most open you can be with someone.
It's true, right?
It is. And I feel that way about, I get really emotional with harmonizing. Because I think it's, like, the most beautiful thing.
I know.
That can happen with someone else. I mean, like, there's many, you know what I mean? Like, in music. And, like, it's just, do you know that song, the Hammond song by the Roaches?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe if he's saying it.
It's like, yeah, no. It's these sisters from New Jersey, and it's this incredible song, but it's like a really—
I remember the Roaches.
Yeah, it's a really difficult, like, five-part harmony. It's really dissonant.
Yeah.
And a really good friend of mine, she did a concert at Joe's Pub a couple years ago, and five of us got up and sang it, and I thought I was going to— Absolutely. Like, I was so emotional, and it was so beautiful. And even, like, when we were rehearsing it in my apartment, like, I just was, I just, my joy level was so markedly different.
Yeah, it's crazy because it is sort of a way of communicating and connecting without any pretense, really. Yeah. And it just happened. Like, I can't even watch musicals because I just cry for no reason.
Yeah. I love musicals. And I think that, like, when they're good.
Yeah.
There is nothing.
Yeah.
Do you know West Side Story pretty decently?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you know, there's these two songs in that, Something's Coming and Maria, like when he first falls in love with Maria.
Yeah.
And he's like singing those huge notes as he walks the streets at night. And I was like, oh, that's what it's like to fall in love. Like you get cracked open.
Yeah.
And it's so, and the way like the orchestra swells, I don't know. I just, to sing with someone is so intimate.
Yeah, it's crazy. I feel like I should do it more, but I try to avoid too much joy.
Cool.
I don't know
who
why.
Who needs it?
Well, you kind of need it, but I feel like on stage, you know, the vulnerability and that feeling is sort of, it has a context.
Yeah.
But just moving through life like that, it feels a little too open.
Too open. Okay, gotcha. But, I like it, you know, well, I do concerts from time to time in New York, and I do sometimes, like, I'm so...
Like what kind of concerts?
I'll do, covers of stuff, and it'll just be me and a band, and I'll be on the piano. Yeah, I love doing it. I don't do it enough, because they're really hard to put together.
What covers do you do?
Oh, all my girls, like Fiona Apple.
Oh, really?
Fiona Apple, Phoebe Bridgers.
Oh,
I wouldn't touch Joni. I would be too afraid.
It's a lot going on with Joni.
It's a lot going on with Joni, and I would just be, I actually also probably wouldn't get through it.
Yeah.
I don't think. Oh. I would start to just fall apart.
Really?
I think so.
I had an experience where I was playing a very long Bob Dylan song before I really had that much confidence.
Yeah.
And it's a horrible thing to be on stage without the confidence to get through.
Oh,
Because part of you wants to shut down.
Yes.
And just kind of like, you know, detach from what's happening.
Yeah.
And it was like about two-thirds of the way through the song, and I was just sort of like, there's so much more of this song left.
Yeah. And then you're...
I said that out loud.
Oh, my God. But then I love when I see that.
You do?
You know? Yeah. If I'm like watching someone perform... I really like, because I really, it feels, I like the intimacy also of like, of being there. It's so of
it
that
yeah,
moment.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I really like appreciate when someone is like, whoo,
yeah.
I'm going through it up here.
Yeah, yeah. It adds to it.
I did a show at Largo once, and I was so excited because I'm a huge Fiona Apple fan, and I know, like, and John
the
Ryan.
One, the cornet, the new Apple, the new Largo, or the old one on Fairfax?
The new
one. Oh, yeah.
And this was like right before the pandemic, and you know, really like am aware of its lore. And because I don't live in LA, like I love her song Largo, and
sure.
I like know the sound of that piano so well. And I did one of my concerts there, and like 30 people showed up.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, my God. Oh, God. And then, like, in real time, I just, like, kind of came unraveled. Like, as I tried to do this
that's
show.
Good. So that's honors Fiona.
Sure. Well, like, I mean, I just.
You could do a whole career unraveled.
I just unraveled and, like, was so. And then I made the decision in the moment. I was like, I'm going to engage with this.
Yeah.
And I think a couple times at the piano, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm really struggling up here. And then, but it was like. echoing through that giant space. So humiliating. It was, or you know what? I don't want to use the word humiliating. It was humbling. to be like, wow, no one showed up. And I opened, I like ripped open my chest and I thought it was going to get them to my side. And it just alienated them further.
Seriously?
Yes.
Are you sure about that? It's hard to read 30 in a big room.
It's hard to read 30 in a big room.
Because they're already like, wow, we're the only ones here.
I know. And everyone was like, it's raining. That's why. And I was like, these fuckers.
The excuses for why a show's not, why a room's not filled up.
You know what? Like a couple friends had come and afterward they were so sweet, but they were like, how you doing? You know what I mean? You're like, oh, no. don't ask me that.
not good job. You were great. But you okay?
Sean okay? It's just that when they drop that voice, so that like no one else in the lobby can hear. Well, not that there was anyone there. But.
but did people know you to be doing that kind of stuff?
Not out here. I don't. Well, I mean, in New York, I do shows at Joe's Pub. And I've done them for years. And that has like a built-in crowd and audience. And I think, I really.
Oh, did you go in all excited?
To the Largo?
Yeah.
Of course I did. Oh my God, I was doing sound check at the piano. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. This piano. This is the best. And then they came back like right at like 5 minutes. And they were like, look, no one's here. And I was like, oh my God. and they were like, so what we've done is we've sort of moved everybody to the front two rows. And I was like,
that doesn't help.
And they were like, we can't hold the box office anymore. Like, it's 10 minutes.
Was
after
it just you?
Yeah.
No band.
I had a guitar player with me.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But I mean, on some level, you can find a unity with the other, you know, with the guitar player.
Yes.
At least.
And he was so sweet. Yeah. But I did. I mean, I remember just crumbling at that piano.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah. It's like one of those things that I think about. It actually makes my entire body get hot and like so embarrassing.
Isn't it crazy? Recalling bombs.
Yes. Yeah. It's terrible.
It's the fucking.
Yeah. And I have a filing cabinet full of them.
What do you mean?
Of bombs?
Yeah.
Yeah. Just like being alive.
Yeah.
Times of the moments
the
in your life.
And just embarrassing.
Yeah. Just like a shame filing cabinet.
Wow. In your head.
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Sure. Yeah. I try to go there at least once a day.
I really try to not to. But it's those things that come up at like 2 a.m. where you're like, oh, yeah. Remember 5 years ago when?
Yeah. But in comedy, oh, my God.
I don't know how you.
The bombing is, it's a weird thing about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because at some point. It never feels, it always is terrible.
Yeah.
It happens less as you get older.
Right.
But at some point you have to factor it into part of the job.
Yes. But it's still what I've done a lot of really bad theater.
Yeah.
Like a lot. Where you can hear the seats flip up because people are leaving.
Or cough white or with the,
that or like. But at the end of the day, like. It wasn't like I was up there talking about myself.
Right.
So like with stand-up, I really am like, how do you do it? It was humiliating enough. I was in a play once where I was like in a babushka with a little shovel at the end, like reading a letter and in like a spotlight and I had to like dodge gunfire and like it was so embarrassing. And that's when the seats would start like flapping up. But I was at least like, well, I mean, maybe I'm doing such a terrible job, but I'm not here being like, so I'm originally from New Jersey.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm not me.
I don't know how you do it. I'm not me.
But there is that moment of realization where, like, the same thing with that long Bob Dylan song. Even if you're in character, you're like, woof.
woof. Yeah.
Oh, when's this going to be over?
Yeah.
As I've gotten older, what happens now when I'm bombing is that, and it doesn't, it's not a, it really doesn't happen. I can, get something out of the moment. Usually that'll save me. But there is a point, it usually happens pretty quickly in a short set, where you just know the audience isn't going to go all the way.
Yeah.
So there's going to be this level. And depending on that level, like I remember I was at the Comedy Cellar and I hadn't been there in a long time. And I was feeling pretty confident. But I know that room's difficult in general, really. Yeah. And what happens was, you've got the tools to kind of survive it. Mm-hmm. But when it's not going well for me, I just feel this like sweat starting to happen, like on the back of my neck.
Yeah, it feels sometimes like a hot helmet that's coming over the back.
Yeah, and you're just sort of like, well, that's happening.
Yep.
And However I'm hiding it, just being here, my body is reacting.
Yes. I mean, a lot of times when you've done a play for a long time, and actually it's kind of the part, it's one of the, I love doing theater. I really am like kind of jonesing to get back.
It's been
like,
a while, right?
It's been a while, and I love it so, so much. But when you do a show like over and over, you can sometimes, you really learn like who's, when it's with you. And there were so many times where, especially like once was like a 2.5 hour
but that's
play.
Like, but that's all, that's a lot of music.
It's a lot of music, but like you could feel within the first 20 minutes, you'd be like, ooh.
Really?
They're not on this ride. And then it's like, well, we're here for the next 2 hours.
I mean, rarely,
that show was so sort of like universally beloved, but there were definitely performances.
But you know, sometimes it's not because they're not on the ride. It's just
That's true too.
They're in it.
Yeah.
But they're not giving you what you need.
Yeah.
And that's a fundamental misunderstanding on their part.
Didn't
we're
you know?
We're here to meet the performer's needs.
Exactly.
What do you think this is?
Yeah.
These people have been trying their whole life to be loved.
Yeah. So get it together.
Yeah, do your part as a fucking audience.
Yeah, but I do. But I also kind of like, I feel like that's the fun challenge of those like long runs. I mean, that was like I did that for a year, which I don't know if I could do that again.
Can do that.
That was over 500 performances, and it was like.
But to be locked into the same thing, I mean, even as a comic, I mean, you got the same bits, but you're always, it's fluid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I can add stuff in, I can change it up, I can make decisions.
I mean, I couldn't add anything in.
Just start riffing. Vamping.
Yeah. No, but like, I do remember that, like, toward the end, because you do it so many times.
Yeah.
Like, there were times where I experienced this, like, incredible feeling of, like, I knew the words so well and I knew the music so well that I could like let go. Mm. And it felt like,
oh yeah,
actually I was like, whoa, this is so like, it's just kind of like moving through me.
Hyper
and that
present.
Was cool. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
And then other days I'd be like, I don't know what my next line is. And I hate this. This is not very professional, but like the times that I've been on stage and someone has forgotten a line.
Yeah.
There's nothing funnier.
Yeah. Oh, and it's got to be the best.
So you're just like.
They're looking at you terrified.
Yeah. And you're just like, uh-oh. Like the veil has been lifted.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I just want to giggle. Yeah. Because this is crazy.
Do you laugh?
Yes.
Yeah. And have you laughed in like really heavy plays?
Mm-hmm. I laughed once. One time, actually, not to just keep talking about once. I just like, I did so many performances of that.
Yeah. It's a whole life.
It's a whole life.
It's a year and a half or something.
But there was like a scene where one of the guys in the show, he like rips these like warm-up pants off.
Yeah.
And he's in these like little shorts. And it was like St. Patrick's Day or something. And he wore this like weird green underwear.
Yeah.
And I just, because you're so not used to something like that
changing, happening. Yeah.
Yeah. And he did it. And I laughed so hard we had to stop the show.
Really?
Yeah. And then it was like that thing where like everyone was like, ha, 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 that's funny. And then it became like.
Ridiculous.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Do your job.
Couldn't stop it.
Couldn't stop it.
But it did bring the audience back around.
Yeah, I mean, but I think they were they were already in it. I think, I don't remember, but yeah. I mean, it's I'm like always this close.
Yeah, it's weird. You know, I think that connects you. The audience likes the vulnerability of the immediacy of it.
Mm-hmm.
But then, like they, you know, you kind of fuck their head up. They're like, why can't we have more of that? Like, there's so much crowd work going on with comedy now.
Yeah.
Like, people talking to the audience. It's like, you're ruining it.
Yeah.
We have to have some separation.
Yes.
They can't be part of everything.
I know.
Because then you're just beholden to their, like, silly.
That would make me very nervous.
What? That crowd work?
Yeah.
Well, I can do it. But then it's like, once you do that, then they're like, it's about us.
And, are you sure? And you're like, no, it's me.
That's right. Exactly. I prepared stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So, like, when did you start? Wait, Cherry Hill, New Jersey? That's where you're from?
Yeah.
That's like Philly.
Philly.
Almost.
Yeah.
Yeah, because my people are from Northern Jersey.
Oh, really? Where?
Like near, I guess, what's the big city around there? Wayne?
Wayne.
Pompton Lakes.
I don't know.
Bergen County.
Oh, Bergen County, yeah.
Yeah. But that's a whole different New Jersey.
Yeah.
Seems like there's different jerseys.
There's a lot of.
There's Philly Jersey.
Beach Jersey. Yep.
And then up there in the like north rural Jersey.
Yes. I grew up in Philly Jersey, but then my whole family is from Atlantic City. So it's. Grew up like Beach Jersey and then Philly Jersey.
Yeah. A lot of my people were from Asbury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Of Asbury.
Yeah. So you were going to Atlantic City when you were a kid?
I was going to like Ocean City, Margate, like around there, which is also like so different now. Everything got like raised and made into mansions, and I haven't been back.
Isn't that weird?
It's so weird.
Because I remember Asbury Park and Atlantic City just being garbage. Just the, like before, it was it was just a beat up kind of like boardwalk.
It was really beat up.
Yeah, and there wasn't like there was no real activity there. Yeah. It was just these old ghosts of buildings,
which I loved. Like it's Ocean City had this like little amusement park that was so dangerous.
So did Hasbury had a little one,
and we would go all the time.
Yeah,
and it was so like you know it was truly like it being inside of a Springsteen song or something, and I loved it.
Yeah, yeah, and those rides. It's like I went out to Coney Island to ride the Cyclone once. Yeah. And it's just like it's the worst roller coaster in the world.
I went there last summer with someone. And
you did?
Yeah, a friend of mine. We were like, let's like have a night at Coney Island. Mm. And the Cyclone was closed because there had just been a thunderstorm. Yeah. And we got on this ride called the Tickler, which is like already upsetting.
Yeah.
And I got so scared I screamed myself hoarse.
Really?
Because I just was like,
you're afraid the ride's going to break.
I thought the ride was going to break. And the Tickler really tries to like almost slam you into a pole. And I just kept screaming, I don't trust this.
Yeah.
And I really, truly terrified myself out of a voice.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah. And I was like, I don't know if I can.
It's not controlled terror like some of these newer rides where you're like, yeah, it's pretty well built.
But those, I like a ride in theory because I'm like, wow, this is the closest I'll get to flying.
Yeah.
But like, I don't, can it all, what if a screw?
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to go like that.
I get no. It's such a rarified way to go.
It's such a rarified way to go.
You just win the stupid lottery. Yeah. How the fuck can you die on a ride?
I know.
I get that on planes now because like I just assume that all the controllers have been fired.
Yeah, I know. I'm a terrible flyer anyway. But yes, as of late, it's been very difficult to be up there.
Just picture one guy in the tower going, "I can't do this myself."
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The ride things, I just went on a ride recently because I decided that, like, I had a wife once who was into roller coasters. Mm-hmm. So I'd go on them.
Yeah.
And somehow I'd forgotten that I never liked them.
Yeah.
And I went on a ride. We were doing some bad guys press, and Rockwell wanted to go on one of the rides at Universal. And it was the little roller coaster one. It was what the hell was it?
I've never been there.
It's a very short ride, and it's the mummy ride.
Okay.
It's the mummy thing.
Like the movie?
Yeah, and it happens in the dark.
Niche.
Like this. Okay. Well, that's what Universal is. And but I got so nauseous.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the fuck is the thrill of this? I was fucked up for the whole day.
Yeah,
just
I know.
Queasy.
A million years ago, when I was 18, I worked at Hershey Park for a summer.
You did?
And I was a singer/dancer. Dancer in real light quotes.
Yeah.
And one of the things that they, like, it was a horrible summer. But one of the things they offered as, like, a perk was that you would have one day where you could come and ride all the rides for free.
Yeah.
And I think I came on my one day off and was like, gotta get these rides in.
Yeah, yeah.
And got so sick.
Yeah.
Because I was 18. Like, I should have been able to, but my neck got hurt.
Yeah.
I was so nauseous.
Yeah.
I was exhausted. I got, like, slammed around all day. Yeah.
Yeah.
The heat.
Yeah.
While chocolate is getting pumped through the vents. Like, it's disgusting.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
So that was your first show business gig?
Yeah, that was one of my first show business gigs. It was right after my freshman year of college. We all, like a bunch of us, like went, and it was like a big open audition for like cruise ships and amusement parks.
Oh,
and all my friends got it, and I didn't. On the ships and in Hershey Park.
So you didn't get
I didn't get it, and I went home devastated. I was like, wow.
Yeah.
And then someone broke their ankle, and they called
at Hershey.
Well,
it's better than the cruise ships. Can you be on a boat?
You can.
No, but like, don't you get nauseous?
Oh, me?
Yeah.
I would never get on a cruise. Cruises freak me out because like it's all. It's
you're
just
out in
like,
the water.
It's just a giant bathroom.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Sure.
Like, don't we know that now?
Well, yeah, it's not. It doesn't feel safe.
Doesn't feel safe.
On the bacterial level.
And also kind of since Titanic, I'm like, we shouldn't be doing this.
Have you seen some of those boats where you're like, how does that even, like they're hotels, they're literally hotels.
Yeah. Yeah,
I went
way too anxious.
I went on one with for my grandmother's birthday at some point in my life, and I was a grown up, and it was just you just walk around and eat.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah,
but I get nauseous on boats too.
Yeah,
immediately.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, you're lucky.
Yeah.
But you felt like you needed to go get nauseous on rides at least once. It was better than every day on a boat.
Oh my God, I wouldn't have done it. Yeah.
So, did you come from like a big Italian clan?
No.
Oh.
No. We're just like Americans in New Jersey.
Oh. No, you're just
no
not.
Feast of the whatever fish.
No.
Like, no. It was just no. I mean, you know, that my dad's side is my grandfather was Italian.
Yeah.
And then.
Oh, so you're not all Italian?
No.
What's the other part?
Belgian.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, and then my mom is like Irish and Czech, but I you know, yeah. So it's like a real
Yeah, but you got enough Italian in you to do the Italian thing.
Well, sure. It's pretty strong for you,
eh? You can be cast as Italian.
Yeah, I can. Although, you know, I've never been to Greece before. And recently I've like had a couple of interactions with people who are like, I know a lot of Miliotis in Greece. You're Greek.
Really?
Yeah.
You never did the 23andMe thing?
I don't know why.
What?
It's like when people are like, you going to get your dog's DNA tested? I'm like, no, he's a dog.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but you're not a dog.
I know.
You're a person.
But I'm like,
you're curious. A dog's not walking around going like, who am I? What is my...
Yeah. I don't know. There's something about it where I'm like, I'm good.
Leave it a mystery?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was hoping for some Viking, but I just got Jew.
Zero. Zero Viking.
Zero, just 99.9% Ashkenazi.
Know. Maybe I'll do it.
Yeah.
But
well, I think they went bankrupt. You're going to have to try to get yourself on that Finding Your Roots show.
I would love to be on that show. That show's so emotional.
Yeah, I did it.
You did?
Yeah, it's crazy.
Did you cry?
No, I didn't cry that much because most of my stuff, there was some lunatic great-great-grandfather who made the news a lot where he lived down in the Carolinas for being – I was able to track my dad's bipolar to that guy. And then on the other side, they just went – he said he went back as many generations as they could or more than they'd ever been able to into like Russia.
Yeah.
To track my patriarch, or I think it was my dad's father's line.
Yeah.
And how emotional is it? Like, he was a tailor.
Yes. I know. I think about this, I have so many moments in my life that I'm just overwhelmed by, that I, like, I'm able to do this.
Yeah.
Or just, like, those crazy career moments where you're working with someone who you have grown up admiring or something, and you're just like, whoa, this life is, like, what a miracle.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'll be like, and my grandparents escaped war and were in the Depression. And like, it's incredible.
Well, that's a nice way to frame it, that like somehow or another, like, how did I get from here from there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the struggles were different.
Totally. But I have an apartment that I got with being playing make-believe.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
So that's gratitude there.
Yeah. And like, you know, it's just,
that's good. Like, it's good that do you live in that, or is that something you have to kind of make yourself do?
Depends. I wouldn't say. I'd say that sometimes I do have to really be like, hey. But that's not because of, I think that's just because of being alive. And it's like, especially right now, you look around the world and you're like,
it's fucking worst.
It's the worst. And why does someone get this life? And why does someone get this life?
Sure.
There's no rhyme or reason. And it's devastating.
Yeah, totally. But then you have to lean into the sort of like, but I'm telling stories.
But I'm telling stories for a giant conglomerate.
Yeah. Yeah. But it makes people happy moment.
Yes. And I do think that I don't know. It's like,
I always think about that.
I get incredible joy from like when I go see concerts and when I go see, you know, certain plays and certainly when I watch movies as well. And so I do think that there is like, and especially like growing up, I like songs and movies were like what helped me figure out how I was like feeling about certain things.
Well, yeah, I've never leaned on it more. In my life than right now in this sort of political and cultural moment.
Yeah.
The need for, especially if it's great, to be engaged with a story that, reveals humanity
and
or moves. Yeah, and all that stuff. It does feed you a certain human thing that you're not going to get from the world right now.
Well, I think it reminds me of, and this is actually like we were talking about with music and singing with someone, like not to put too, I don't know, like when I hear a certain song or if I see something and it reminds me that like humanity is good. Like just in the same things when like my interactions with my loved ones, I'm like, oh, right, human beings can be like really, really good. Because I think when I look at what's happening, I'm like, what are we? We're just always evil.
Well, they can go bad.
Yeah, I know. But why? But so many go bad.
Yeah, because their brains have been fucked.
Yeah.
By their phones and this never ending, pummeling of propaganda that's exploiting their misery and empowering them to be horrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. We figured it out.
We figured it out finally.
No, but that's the thing about theater. Like, because I always wrestle with that, you know, this idea that, you know, theater is vital to the community and all that kind of stuff, because it's so insulated now.
Right.
I mean, you got these Broadway shows that that become kind of a ride at the amusement park. But, you know,
for sure.
But challenging plays and plays that really explore humanity and character. I mean, it's not like they get necessarily huge audiences all over, but there is that thing that we're talking about, that the vulnerability and the connection with a group of people that is essentially human and happening in front of them is, it really is powerful.
It is.
And it, I think it does change people to a degree, or at least re-engage them with what's important in life.
And it plucks you out of your isolation.
Yeah.
It just like asks you to be together.
That's
and
right.
engage with something.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's incredible.
Yeah. And it's, I think it's pretty noble work. When I was touring this last the stand-up show before I shot the special, you know, because I'm pretty lefty and like my audience knows who I am. Mm-hmm. And there was this real feeling that it was community service. It was important to get all these isolated, frightened people and feeling powerless into one room so that they could at least feel seen and part of something.
Yeah. And have some like relief too, and like having that and then being able to laugh.
Yeah. It's such a drag that all we can do now is like give people relief.
Yeah, I know.
Do you know what I mean?
I know.
It used to be proactive, like some part of like an evolved progression towards something better. Now it's just sort of like, oh, this still exists. Thank God.
Yeah, I know.
God damn it. What are we going to do? Let's fix it. Can we fix it here?
I think we can fix it by the end of this.
So you have siblings?
I have a younger brother.
Just two of you?
Just two of us.
What business was your family in?
My mom is a banker, and my dad does like IT stuff, like programming for like a law firm who makes sure that like all their programs are talking to each other running. And my brother's a musician. He's a brilliant bassist.
Oh, bass.
Bass.
Those guys are important.
Yeah. Yeah, they are. They really hold it down.
Yeah, the quiet bass guy. The rhythm section is very important.
Yeah.
Why the lunatics jump around.
But he's not quiet. He's like one of the funniest people I've ever met.
But on bass, though, like you got to kind of like you're the backbone of the whole thing.
Oh, right. You're not like shredding.
Yeah. Well, there's some shredders.
He does. I mean, he does.
He can do it.
He does like a.
Is he in a combo or a band?
He's in a band, yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Are they doing all right?
They're doing really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
In New York?
Crickets and Cicadas. Sort of around like Philly and New Jersey. And
Yeah. And it's all original stuff?
Some of it's covers and then some of it's original.
They got records out?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Good.
Yeah.
And so when do you start doing this this ridiculous job that we do?
When did I start? I started I knew I wanted to be... Like, when was my first, like, professional?
No, whatever? I mean, like, when did you get the bug?
Oh, I got the bug early.
Yeah?
Just because I love movies, and I love, like, singing, and I love... So I was, like, one of those kids. And I watched a lot of movies with my dad that, like, weren't for kids.
Yeah. Good parenting.
Good parenting, yeah. Like, a lot of Coen Brothers films. Like,
well,
a lot
okay.
of...
Well,
yeah, Tarantino.
Too, well, that's a little...
Yeah. Like, yeah. But, like, you know, when I'm, like, eight.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah, and, so. Like, we kind of watched what he wanted to watch, and we also watched... He, like, showed me The Third Man and Key Largo, and, like, I had, like, this, like, really vast...
The Third Man.
The
so
Third Man is so good.
When they're up on that Ferris wheel.
Oh, my God. I just saw it again recently. It was, like, they played it at the Metrograph in New York. Have you been there?
I haven't. Well, I think I have.
On the Lower East Side.
Yeah, yeah,
great.
Yeah.
And I had never seen it on the big screen, obviously, and I was so...
It's so good.
It's a perfect film.
Yeah.
And so, like, I just... So we would watch all these movies together, and then I was also, you know, like, I loved Kids in the Hall, and I loved... Like, I just kind of watched what my dad watched.
Yeah.
And I knew that, like, I wanted to be in that, like, inside of it. It's sort of like a song, or a... Like, I just was like, what do I have to do to be near that?
Well, yeah.
And... But, like... When I was nine, I went for Halloween as a stressed out director. Like, I thought I was going to direct.
That's pretty high minded for a 9-year-old.
None of the other kids knew.
So
yeah, they were like, "You look like our dads."
What were the props for the stressed out director?
I was like in jeans and a baseball hat. And yeah. I wore glasses as a kid, and so I had glasses, and then a flannel shirt tied around my waist, and a script, and I just like walked around being like, "Oh God, what are we gonna do?"
That's pretty yeah. creative.
Yeah,
yeah. Were you directing the other animals in costumes? And
not
people?
That day, but I did also try to direct other kids in like sketches and stuff.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And I didn't know that I necessarily like wanted to be an actor, I think, till, you know, like I did it in high school, and I think around then I started to really be like, oh, I want to see if I can do this.
Yeah.
Because I love this so much.
Yeah. And so you started, I keep thinking about The Third Man and that moment where, you know, where Harry's obviously toast, he's caught.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden he becomes this frightened feral human just running through those sewers or whatever.
Yes. And there's like all that incredible like shadow work.
And it's just like it was so great to see that character scramble.
Yeah. It's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, we need more of that now.
I know.
We want to send all those people scrambling. Those grift. It's like it's a pretty relevant movie too.
Oh yeah,
the personalities.
I remember watching it and thinking, this is such a weirder movie than I remember.
Yeah,
like it's actually because you know, I mean, I love all those old movies, but they've been homage has been paid to them so many times, and you sort of like get swept up in them. And I was like, "Ooh, this is such a spiky, strange, wacky movie."
And like the story itself, and all that weird zither music.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
So yeah, so I, you know, I'm very grateful that he was showing me stuff like that.
Yeah, and so in high school, you're doing what, musicals?
Yeah,
you're
doing musicals.
Yeah,
yeah,
and you're belting it out.
You're belting it out.
Yeah, but were you running around doing auditions for commercials and stuff? Did you?
I was in a commercial when I was little. That was like a local access commercial.
That's a pretty exciting day, wasn't it?
I hated it. Hated it. I was like six, seven, maybe. It was for toilet seat protectors. So
wow.
Yeah.
And high end.
My high end. Thank you. And I just remember. I remember little bits and pieces of it. And then I think at the end of the day, I said to my parents, I was like, "This was torture. I don't ever want to do this again."
Well, that. I mean, it's weird because that's a lot of what makes, you know, film and TV acting horrible.
Yeah.
It's just that you don't have any control.
Yeah, and it was...
And I
was,
you're waiting around.
Oh, my God. I think I said, like, one line, and it was truly, like, you know, like a local access, like, really, like, low budget.
Yeah.
And then I played sports for a long time and really loved that. And then got into theater again. It's sort of in middle school because I was really bullied and made fun of a lot. And the kids that were really
what were they bullying?
I had like a shaved head and I looked. I just got endlessly roughed up.
So, but you were a rebel.
I was like a little goof.
But you shaved your head for a reason.
I shaved my head because there was a girl at camp who shaved her head, but she was like older and like could rock it. And then I was like, I'm going to do this. But I had like a mustache and a buzz cut and was a goof and like showed up to the first day of middle school wearing a T-shirt that said "Don't mess with Texas" that I'd like seen at a Goodwill or something, and I just was like, "What's up, everybody?" And they just immediately threw me into a locker
for the whole time.
The whole time, it was awful. I didn't speak to anyone. I was like, I was this really like animated kid, and I just didn't.
Completely. They crushed your spirit.
Crushed it, and the kids that were, and it was like a long time of that, many months of just sort of.
Didn't you find any other weirdos?
The theater kids eventually, like like one of them approached me in the hall and was like, "Hey, do you want to like come to this like activity?" And I like no one had spoken to me. I remember it felt like it was like it was like water in a desert. Like I'd gotten so used to it. The only person who, like for that period of time, who would engage with me was like one of these teachers who was so kind to me because she just saw, like she'd ask me to stay after class and she'd be like, what do you like to do? And like it was so clear that I was just like.
But you knew you wanted to be different. I mean, there was a certain intentionality to
it. Because I'd done it because I'd gone to this summer camp that was like a bunch of misfits. And I had felt so alive. This is where the girl shaved her head.
Yeah, was this like, what was that the angle of the camp? Was it an art camp or something?
It was like arts, but you could still play soccer. It was like kind of just really hippie.
Right.
And so I was just like, it was the best summer of my life.
So you knew that there were weirdos out there that could be their own people.
Yeah, and I felt like popular for the first time.
Yeah,
I was only ever popular at camp. And then I think I came home with that confidence.
Back to Jerry Hill.
And then just got, because I was like, yeah, I just had these like, and by the way, because when you're little, like time is, I think I'd been at camp for 3 weeks and I was like, I'm a new person. Yeah. Like I am the king. I am like, and then I shaved my head. I showed up with like a magnetic nose ring. Like I was rocking my mustache.
Yeah, you put yourself
just,
out there.
Yeah, just brutalized. It
What's
sucked.
The mustache thing?
Just genetic, I guess. Just being like.
But you really made it stand out.
I think I didn't know about it. And right. then I remember that year a boy looking at it.
Uh-huh.
And I suddenly was like, what's he looking at? And then I walked into the bathroom and I was like, oh my God. Like, I didn't know I had that. And I didn't know. I remember that with, I mean, God, that age is so terrible. I was wearing.
What, like 13 or 14?
Yeah, I was like 12 or 13.
Yeah.
And I remember like I wore shorts. And I saw someone like staring at my legs and I was like, what's going on? Like, what's on my leg?
Yeah.
And then I like saw that I had like hair on my legs and I was like, oh, I don't know. It was awful.
And then, then awful. The sort of the beat down begins from the inside too.
So
that's
like
the worst.
So really like these kids who were so sweet to me.
Yeah.
Kind of. And then I started doing these plays in middle school and I was like, wait, I love this.
Yeah,
this is like
it gets
camp.
You out.
Yeah, it gets me out. And also I was somewhere where I could like, you know, I mean, I could escape.
Yeah.
I could like be someone else.
Yeah.
And I think that at that time was a relief.
And also just the community of theater kids.
Oh my God.
That, you know, that they, because they all are bound by this, you know, we're kind of weirdos and unique.
And we have big feelings.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like,
yeah.
We're just trying different stuff.
Thank God for middle school theater.
They saved me, you know, because I was really like, it was terrible. I feel so much for anyone who goes through that. But like, you know, to be that lonely and to be like that bullied, it was horrible. And like your parents don't know how to help you.
Yeah, it's so heartbreaking because there's just going to be more and more of it now as they ditch these programs and make.
I know.
Yeah,
I've thought so much about that. Like that
LGBTQ kids.
Totally.
Feel it's going to be like a fucking
And that
nightmare.
Program saved my life.
Yeah. Because
for
people
sure.
are unique.
Yeah.
And then individual spirit is special.
Yeah.
And now it's just, they're just kind of crushing everybody to kind of abide by.
Yeah.
Which was always there.
Totally.
But at least you had a refuge.
You had a refuge.
Yeah.
And like, you know, how incredible that, yeah, I went to this like giant public middle school in New Jersey, but that they like set aside money for us to put on like some dinky little play.
That's
and
good.
And then they let me write a play too. And then I got to like act in that cast people. And I really was like, whoa, like I never want to leave. This is the safest place on earth.
What was the play about?
The play was about an actress in her 80s who has come back to the theater where she made her debut. And she's like, all her ghosts are haunting her. And she's like, I've lived a terrible life. I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then we took it to
that's pretty heavy for
I know.
And then eighth grader.
And then we took it to this like little theater competition. Yeah. And I remember the judges afterward were like, honey, have you ever seen Sunset Boulevard? And I was like, I don't know what that is. Because I hadn't. I was like, no. And they were like, it feels like you copied it. And then I like went out in the parking lot and
cried.
No, I bought, I mean, it's even worse than crying. I bought a pack of candy cigarettes.
Yeah, and just ate them?
Just ate them. But like pretended to smoke them.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
But then like would chew on them.
Yeah.
Because
yeah,
I was just like,
oh,
fuck, they don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're just coming down on you from all sides. Here are the grown-ups.
Gosh.
Who are supposed to just appreciate your creativity. And they call you a hack. Did you watch Sunset Boulevard?
I've still never seen the movie, but I just saw the show.
Well, how was that?
Loved it.
You never saw the movie?
I've still never seen it.
Oh, you got to see that movie.
Yeah, I know.
That's right up there with The Third Man.
Yeah, I know. And it somehow didn't make it into our...
It's a crazy movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay,
you got to
watch it.
Yeah, this, you know, it opens up with a voiceover of a guy dead in a pool.
Oh, sign me. I'm in.
Yeah. So after that, in high school, you felt confident?
Yeah, and then high school, I was like really, you know, I was in bands a lot.
Singing?
I was like, yeah, I was the singer for the jazz band, and we did Battle the Bands. Like, I was like in, and I found like musician kids too, and then theater kids, and I did a lot of plays, and just felt.
God, so you really had chops by the time you got out of high school.
I don't know if I'd say they were
well,
chops.
Well, no, but you did a lot of stuff.
I did a lot of stuff.
I mean, at least you had confidence in self-expression or in that world.
Yeah, and I knew that I...
You don't seem that troubled.
Cool.
You're really good at this, huh? Because like, you know, I watched a lot of your stuff, and I'm like, yeah. she's gonna be a lunatic.
You really thought that?
Not a lunatic. I have to be careful about how I throw around the word crazy.
Yeah.
But I did sense after seeing a couple roles that there's probably a lot going on in there.
Yeah. there's a lot going on inside any of us.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, you can rationalize it however you want.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not special. We're all.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But so what do you do after high school? You're just like, I'm doing it?
I went to NYU and was miserable.
Why were you miserable there?
I think, I've wanted to live in New York my whole life. I've like been obsessed with New York. All growing up, I was like, I just have to get to New York.
Yeah.
And I think I just wasn't ready to be in college. Like, and especially in Manhattan.
Away from home, you mean?
I think I just wasn't.
Too much?
It was like too much. And then I was in this program. I was taking out student loans, so I knew I was going into debt.
Yeah.
And I was only getting to act like 5 minutes a week. And so, and I was like living in New York City and like, you know, I think I just kind of, I was really unhappy there. And so then I dropped out like halfway through my sophomore year, right after the Hershey Park summer.
Oh, boy, two hits.
The hits keep coming.
Showbiz is not going well.
But I do remember, like, we did a, whenever we would do, like, scene classes in college, I do remember being like, oh, I just want to be doing this, like, all the time.
Yeah. And also, you're all full of the juice, you know, you're all worked up.
Yeah.
And you're probably delivering some pretty intense scene study business.
I don't remember. I know that we did Chekhov, and I'd never read Chekhov before, and I loved it. Yeah. I was like, oh, my God, a bunch of Russian people sitting around being like, what's the point?
Yeah.
Sign me up.
Yeah.
Like, I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I loved, too, you know, like, I love singing so much, but I also think that, like, when I was there, and it was, like, a different time, too, and I think they were trying to help. They were trying to help you be employed.
Right.
And so when I would sing, they would be like, you know, your voice isn't for musicals. It's like low and it's, you know, it's like singer song.
What the fuck is with these grown-ups?
I know. And so, I look back on this and like, I don't know if I would drop out of school now. It took being like a ballsy 18-year-old or 19-year-old to be like, what?
Yeah, fuck you guys.
Fuck you.
And then so what do? You're just in New York?
I was just in New York. And right before I dropped out, an agent came to this like, I was in this like black box theater production of a show based on the sorrows of young Goethe. Do you know that?
No.
Goethe. Oh, it sounds all sounds good.
Goethe.
It sounds, feels lame to be pronounced Goethe. Like,
the guy who looks wrote like, Faust.
Yeah. But I played like this drug addled pop star. And who has like a complete nervous breakdown and is like, but like was a Disney kid. And
so
this woman saw me in it and she was like, I'm going to send you on 2 auditions and see how you do.
Really?
And I got one of them.
Oh, that's so the black box here. So you know what it's like to perform for 10 people.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So the Largo thing was just, you thought you were beyond
Except
that.
Except we sold out that black box theater in college. Yeah.
But, and it was still 30 people.
And it was still,
But it was sold out.
But it was sold out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she saw something.
She just was, she was like, we're going to just see how this.
And what'd you get?
I got The Sopranos.
Oh, yeah. I watched you in that.
Yeah. I'm a baby.
Yeah.
And then I did.
Kind of emaciated.
Yes, emaciated.
Was that required? Or was that a choice?
It was not a choice. I was just very emaciated during that time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
What a great thing to be on that set.
Yeah. It was really overwhelming. And Steve Buscemi directed it, and I was because I, you know, I watched so many movies of his growing up. Like we'd seen Living in Oblivion, Trees Lounge. Like my dad, those had all been on the list. Every Coen Brothers film, obviously. Sure. So I knew I was so overwhelmed.
But he's such a sweet guy,
the sweetest guy. So kind,
really categorically sweet guy.
And then like after that, I couldn't get work for like a year and a half or something. And I,
were you doing?
I was a dog walker, and I worked in a cafe, and Steve Buscemi would come into the cafe every now and then and be like, how's it going?
Yeah.
And I'd be like, not good. Like, I don't know.
Yeah.
And he was always so sweet and was just like, all right, we'll keep going. And like, I just kind of did odd jobs for a while.
And then what happens? Do you get, like, what starts the run?
I started to get, off-Broadway plays, and they all kind of like came in a big sort of like run of them.
Yeah.
So I was doing like, and that is where I feel like I really like learned a lot. And so I was doing stuff at New York Theatre Workshop and Lincoln Center and Playwrights Horizons.
That's so rare now to like actually have a foundation in theater.
Yeah. I'm so blessed.
It makes sense, yeah. Because like I don't know that I necessarily would have noticed you,
mm-hmm.
and for some reason I just, you know, I'm not even a comic book person,
yeah.
And I'm watching The Penguin,
yeah,
because you're kind of like, you know, let's see what Colin Farrell did with this getup,
yeah.
And I kind of got locked in.
Yeah.
And then when you come on, I'm like, who the fuck is this person?
Yeah.
But that is such a, like, theatrical role.
Yeah, it is.
That whole world is like a theater.
It is. I've also been such a massive Batman fan my whole life.
Yeah.
In particular.
No, I like Batman,
because it's so
too.
Theatrical.
Oh, yeah.
Because no one has a superpower.
It's truly gothic.
It's gothic. It's Colin and I would talk about all the time that it felt like an opera.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Everything is so heightened. And it's like an opera about hurt people.
Well, what's his name? Why am I spacing his name? The Tim Burton Batman's the best.
Oh, my God. It's so
the best.
Like, and it does that line of like high camp.
Yeah.
But also, like, you know, you're devastated for them.
Sure.
They're devastating.
Yeah. And Batman, that character in and of itself is like, you know, totally a tragic.
So tragic.
Operatic
and there's such a
hero.
Fine line between him and his villain.
And it's very hard to beat Danny DeVito's Penguin.
It's a great performance.
It's fucking crazy.
But I'm partial to my guy.
Well, it's a whole different thing.
It's a whole different thing.
Because, yeah. You know, you guys are playing it in sort of a reality frame.
Yeah.
Whereas that was not, you know, yeah. That was all heightened.
Very heightened, yeah.
You know, the decision to make these people.
Yeah.
Was kind of great.
Yeah.
Because it gets you in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then it kind of like, I think our showrunner, Lauren LaFranc, she's so, so brilliant.
Yeah.
I can't say enough about her. She really is, like, it's like some of the best writing I've ever gotten to work with.
Yeah.
And she, I think she, the way in which she, like, humanizes them, then they're allowed to sort of go nuts.
Yeah.
Because you're like, I get it.
But it happens within a frame of, you know, there's a point of reference for all of it.
Yeah.
In sort of crime, you know,
yes.
Movies and
right.
Dramas, and so with all the backstories and stuff, you know, it subverts the bigness,
yeah.
of it,
yeah,
you know, because and you're allowed to do that, and it makes sense,
yeah,
but it does feel like it's still rooted in something familiar,
yes,
yeah.
Well, because like, there are so many moments, like, you know, I don't know, did you watch the whole thing?
Yeah,
there's like a when I. Not to like spoil anything, but when I'm in that gown with the gas mask and like,
yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
That's I no one would do that in life, and
yeah.
Yet it was like
sure
it's you do believe it in
yeah.
This real thing, even though it's so operatic.
Yeah,
I mean it was yeah.
But it's like it but any sort of even a procedural gets ridiculous.
Yes,
but you know you've just been trained to kind of like all right, well I guess I couldn't have seen this coming.
Yeah, right.
And it's okay.
Yeah,
yeah.
I loved it so much. I love.
No, it's good.
Yeah.
It seems like a role where you know you could sort of like engage, you know, all the possibilities of what you do outside of singing.
Yeah, it did. It felt like
you could have sang in that. Maybe,
yeah, maybe
I mean,
that's.
It's
yeah.
Not. I don't think God, Joker no. 2 did that well. I wouldn't make the whole thing a musical. But
yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't know how Sophia would ever.
Not unless you changed the whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I did really feel like I got to use. A bunch of different parts.
Yeah.
And that
no, totally.
Was incredible.
To be all fucked up and crazy and institutionalized.
Like, yeah. And then also just like turn into a creature. I mean, I just loved
well,
it.
Yeah. And be able to sort of see that kind of brewing, that mm-hmm. that moment where, you know, it's an interesting moment in these kind of, even when I'm rewatching Succession, that whatever drives Kendall to make the decision
yeah.
to take over.
Yeah.
But you know, you're fundamentally kind of evil.
Well,
maybe not.
Depends on. This is what I like about it. Depends.
Yeah, I
depends
mean, not totally
to.
Evil, but
yeah.
Ruthless.
Ruthless.
Yes, but yeah, I thought it was. I thought it was kind of great. I really liked the whole thing. Then I watched Palm Springs.
Oh yeah, I loved that.
It's a weird movie, right?
Yeah, I loved it.
It's a good device.
It's a good device. I also like. I got to watch that movie at Sundance right before. the world shut down, and I got to be in this like audience of like 400 people, and no one knew the twist that it's like a time loop movie.
Yeah.
It was I will like never forget that. Because the whole audience gasped, like when they figured out what it was.
And then they're like at about a third of the way through, you know, the other part of you waking up is revealed.
Yeah.
And then it becomes kind of the challenge of engaging in life and, you know, owning yourself and all that stuff.
I know. I always thought it was like a real, I mean, I know it's like a time loop rom-com, but I also was like, it's also like an existential comedy.
Totally. And then I watched the 30 Rock.
Yeah.
Which was hilarious because I'm a stand-up.
One of my favorites.
You want to hear something funny?
Yeah.
I got, you know, because I just did this show with Silverman, with Sarah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you know, I told her I was interviewing you. And she's like, oh, I love her. And I'm like,
oh, my God.
Yeah. And then,
so sweet.
And then
I love her too.
It was like, did you see that 30 Rock? And she's like, no, but I heard about it. Because
yes, I have heard about this. Yes, okay.
And I'm like, what? Yeah. And I didn't even put it together. I'm such an idiot that people thought you're being some version of her. I didn't see that though.
I didn't either. You know, I thought it was so. First of all, that was like one of my favorite things I've ever gotten to do.
It was so funny because, like, you know, you can do comedy, and that's rare in and of itself. So you really got to kind of do that thing.
And I got to, like, go for it. And, you know, I always thought that that episode was such a skewering of what is so commonplace now of, like, this sexy baby.
Yeah.
I mean, that voice is everywhere.
Well, it's weird.
In everything.
Right. But it's weird because I told Sarah, I said, it's more like Felicia Michaels, she was a comic that literally did that. Well, she kind of talks like that anyways.
Yeah.
But she was a comic that, I'm friends with her, but she was one of the few comics that appeared in Playboy, and she used to do that thing, and it was really kind of always sexy and a little dirty. Like, I didn't even see Sarah at all in it.
No, and I always thought, too, that it just was more about, I mean, that's also what I love about that show is, like, the butt of the joke always ends up being Liz Lemon. That, like, here she is trying to be, like, the feminist extraordinaire, and because someone comes in a little crop top talking like a sexy baby, like, she actually also begins to be like, well, you're not funny.
Yeah,
and, you know,
Well, no. I didn't know what the twist was going to be because I didn't watch the show.
It's a great twist.
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, and I loved that job so much. I also was like a really massive 30 Rock fan.
Yeah.
I watched it every week, and I remember like pretending to not know. Like when I got there, I'd like had a bunch of like wig tests or something, and then they took me around being like, and then this is Jack Donaghy's office, which I like knew intimately from watching so many episodes. And I was like, oh, wow, whose office? Like, I really wanted to downplay that I was like obsessed with it.
Well, you get to do like, it's interesting to be an actress who, you know, has the opportunity to play all these different parts and not be pigeonholed in a thing.
Yeah. Thank you.
Does that frustrate you?
No.
Okay, good.
Oh, I'm like, that's why, I mean, you know, I try as best as I can, like, you know, and I don't. I mean, you know, you don't really have as much control. You have no control, actually.
As an actor. Yeah.
But I really do try.
Unless you really don't give a fuck and willing to.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Unless unless you're Daniel Day-Lewis and you're out there cobbling shoes, being like, I'll do it when I want to. Like, you know?
Right.
But like, I've really tried to the best of my ability to do as many different types of things as I can and not get, pigeonholed.
And you work all the time.
I do. Thank
you. That's good, right?
Yeah, I do.
And but so when you're on a set with like even in that part you had in Wolf of Wall Street.
Yeah.
Like that's got to be like so exciting.
So exciting.
I mean,
it's so exciting. You know, I wish a lot of times like cuz I am I'm so excited and like the like we were talking about earlier, like the miracle of being able to do this is never lost on me.
Yeah.
But a lot of times the way I begin on a job is like racked with anxiety.
Yeah, of course.
Like cannot like I there's like that's a, actually a really good example of like I look back on that experience and I'm like, wow, I wish you'd just taken it in a little bit more.
Right.
I was so scared.
You get so focused on what you're going to do.
Yes. And like
and if
so.
It's gonna be good.
And if I'm going to be the weak link, if I'm going to disappoint, if I'm going to like duff this opportunity, I'm sitting there, you know, working with artists who I grew up admiring, you know, is an understatement.
Yeah.
And like, I just remember, I remember so much fear around that job, which is such a bummer.
Yeah.
It makes sense too, because I was like, you know, in my 20s and was like,
yeah,
it's scary.
And it was a good role. It wasn't nothing.
No.
You know?
I get in there.
Yeah, yeah. I think, I love that movie. Like, I don't think that it's one of those weird movies that doesn't get enough. Like, I think people misunderstood it.
Yeah, right.
You know?
Yeah, I think they thought it was a celebration.
No, it's
and it's not.
It's a satire.
It's a satire.
And it's a comedy.
Yeah,
it's
totally.
There's such funny shit in that movie.
Yeah.
Like, not just the, you know, when he's on lewds and do that whole thing. But every time, like, as the movie went on, they would cut to the room full of brokers.
Yeah.
It got more crazy.
Yeah.
And at some point, there's a guy doing a backflip.
Yeah.
And it just gets so crazy.
It's like a bacchanal.
Yeah,
I thought it was such a statement on, like, the illness of that world.
Yeah, I thought it was.
But, you know, it's similar to, like, or, you know, I've heard, I read something about how American Psycho is, like, really hitting with like a younger generation of men, and you're
for
like
the wrong reasons.
Yeah, and you're like, what?
Yeah.
How do you watch that and think like, yeah?
Well, now we live in a culture of shameless kind of lawlessness, and that it's not about being a good person. It's about getting away with whatever you can.
I know. That's such a bummer.
Yeah. So what happens now? Are you picked up? Are you doing another Penguin?
We don't know.
You really don't know yet?
We really don't know. I know.
That's crazy.
I know. We don't know.
Yeah. But are you doing other stuff?
Yeah. I'm doing, I just shot a pilot that we're waiting to hear about.
For who?
FX.
Oh, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
What's that?
It's like it's by Will Arbery, who's this brilliant playwright. And it's, I don't know how to describe it. It's like sort of it's about this, these seven sisters. It's like a...
That's a lot. I tried to watch Made for Love, but you can't even find it anymore.
Isn't that...
It's so fucked up.
It's so fucked up. Fucked up.
How does that happen?
That happened because we were a tax write-off.
So you did it for Max.
Did it for Max.
And then it was on Amazon for a minute?
I don't even know if it was.
Oh, maybe it was.
I don't know. I just know that, like, they've ripped it off the platform because... it's like, yeah, part of that massive tax write-off that was like when they ripped...
Warner Brothers?
Yes, when they ripped like Westworld off and all this.
Yeah.
And it's such a bummer because, you know, that was 3 years of our lives. So many people worked so hard on that.
Yeah.
I also think there are so many parts of that show that have become like eerily prescient.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it was a lot about like the tech world. You know, I was married to this like very Elon Musk type character.
Yeah.
And it was all about like... this sort of, I don't know, people in this world of like advanced technology being utterly unable to communicate with each other and like just wanting intimacy so bad and making it worse and worse and worse and worse.
Right, right, right.
And then I was in, you know, Ray Romano and I played father and daughter, and I thought it was this like really special, and they're estranged on the show and they really don't get along.
Yeah.
And it was like such an interesting, I just loved that relationship, and I love Ray.
Yeah, Ray's become a pretty good actor.
He's so good.
Yeah, I mean, I've known Ray before he was, he was a comic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Adored him and adored working with him.
Yeah,
and like, we had to do a lot of really like, you know, like intimate and sad stuff about like a father and daughter who like can't.
That's so crazy.
Make it work.
You can't even buy it.
You can't even buy it. It's just sitting in a vault somewhere. And I'm also like, well, it's like on a USB stick somewhere, probably.
Yeah.
Like, just put it up.
Yeah.
Oh, and it's such a bummer to think that, you know, I mean, it's also like a lot of what came up during the strikes and everything, that like people's hard work, years of hard work can just be.
And it's crazy
evaporated.
That with everything being out there, I mean, you can generally find it somewhere. I mean, I did a show for four seasons. I don't even know where it is.
Yeah.
You know, it showed up because different corporate entities get involved with studios, and then you don't know who's got it and who is selling it.
Totally.
But I think it ended up on, you can get it on iTunes. You can at least buy it.
Yeah, you can't even buy this.
That's crazy.
It's so
and
weird.
There's no recourse for that?
Yeah. I've really, every time I've talked to a couple people, just like through work at Warner Brothers, but then also like Paramount is who made it. And so I know a couple of people at Paramount, and every now and then I'll be like, hey guys, what's going on with this? Like, where is it?
Yeah.
And I think there's just like, no one really knows, it feels like.
It's fucking
which
nuts.
Which is also really nuts.
I don't know.
It was such a like, it was such a weird show, and it was, you know, I don't know.
It's too bad.
I know. I hope that in some way it gets released
on.
Yeah, like I would hope that, like, I don't know, it ends up on Netflix or it ends up somewhere where it can just be seen for a little while, because we worked really hard on it, and I think it has like a lot of interesting stuff to say.
Is there any sort of momentum to try to get it out there?
I mean,
like, did you talk to your lawyer?
I don't have a lawyer.
Oh, okay. You just have an agent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, just an agent.
It's a weird thing about what they get away with. You know,
but
like,
it also never really found its fault. Like, we didn't have a following in the way that like a Succession does or something.
Yeah, but that seems like a thing that Netflix would at least take a try on.
Totally.
And that they could find another life for it.
Where you just like slap it up there, see what happens.
Because it's one thing if you do something and it doesn't, you know, it doesn't do well at the theaters or whatever. Eventually, someone will pick it up somewhere.
Somewhere.
Yeah.
And it's also, it's like 8 episodes. They're 25 minutes. Like, it's not.
It's only 8 episodes?
I think so, per season.
Oh, how many seasons?
We did 2.
Okay.
Maybe it's 10, but they're short.
But it did have some following.
Oh, for sure. People really liked it, but it never, I mean, like, it never became
That hardly happens with anything.
I know, it hardly happens with anything. But I mean, I guess I mean that in terms of, like, you know, of any type of movement to, like,
Free well, that happened with me and Betty and Glow.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't do that last.
I loved that show.
They didn't do the last season.
I remember.
And people are still kind of like, it's a handful of people, but they're kind of like, how can we not know what happened?
I know.
Yeah.
And it's like left on such an open-ended.
I know. And there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. I know.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. I loved that show.
It was a good show.
It was a great show.
It was a lot of fun.
She was so wonderful on it. My God.
Oh, that's nice.
She's one of my favorites.
Who? Yeah. She's great.
Incredible.
It was so interesting to kind of work with her and Allison.
Yeah.
Because
also so good.
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
But they're such different actresses in how they approach things.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because like Betty, you know, Allison came up in movie and television, right? So she came up in L.A. So there's really a difference. I never saw it so clearly between like New York theater, you know, kind of trained people, and then L.A., you know, kind of acting business people or how they approach it with film and TV being the thing always.
Right.
As opposed to, you know, coming up through Black Box Theater and all that
which
other
shit. Which is how Betty and I met, too, was doing a play.
Really?
Yeah.
And Betty's like, you don't know what she's going to do.
Yeah, I know.
Like, you know, every scene you're like, you do a take and you're like, well, I don't know, it's coming.
Yeah.
This one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We played British schoolgirls together in a play.
Oh, yeah.
So if you can imagine the two of us being like, oh, right.
Yeah.
What are you doing later? Like, it was like a lot of that. It was
that's funny.
Just a,
Yeah, she's great.
She's the best.
Do you guys, are you hang out?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. She's one of my,
one of
my dearest.
I'll tell her I talked to you. So how are you going to get back on stage?
I guess I'm just going to. I don't know. I was going to make a stupid joke about hoisting myself up.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm really.
Do you get pitch that stuff?
For sure. I definitely. And there's stuff that I'm, you know.
It's a long commitment for something that I guess part of the you have to factor into it is that if it's a new play,
right,
and then you got to go through the previews, and then you got to run, and you know,
and you have to, I think, really love it. Like I really am looking to get back because I miss it. And whenever I go see a play, I have that feeling of like, oh, I want to get up there.
Like
a little kid or something.
Yeah. And it's every night it happens in real time.
Yeah.
It's not waiting around.
And it's been a minute since I've done one, and I'm like, you do get really rusty. I mean, you know
sure.
what it's like to perform live. And so
when you don't have that muscle for being in front of an audience.
I'm also like, oh God, it's getting up there. I haven't done one in like, I think like 7 years.
Well, that comes back. It probably comes back easier than piano.
I don't know about that. I've spent more time on a piano bench.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, but I mean like being, it's really just about being in front of an audience.
Yes,
I mean, I don't know about memorizing and everything.
You're not talking about like 10,000 hours of something. Yeah.
I just mean that like once you've done, you've already put in that 10,000 hours for theater, that even if you get away from it, even with stand-up, not even laxed. It's just that to have that constant thing open to a live audience.
Yeah.
Like if you don't do that for a while, you kind of get it.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get up there, it kind of, you know, because you kind of need it.
I know.
And you feel it.
I know.
Yeah. Well, it's good talking to you.
It's so nice to talk to you.
She's great, man. Awesome. Again, you can watch The Penguin on Max. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Robinhood bietet Ihnen Zugang zum US-Aktienmarkt. Sie können Krypto zu niedrigen Kosten kaufen und verkaufen. Alles an einem Ort. Auf Robinhood. Investment- und Kryptowertedienstleistungen für EU-Kunden werden von der Robinhood Europe UAB angeboten, die von der Zentralbank Litauens als Finanzmakler und Kryptowertedienstleister zugelassen ist und deren Aufsicht unterliegt. Termingeschäfte auf US-Aktien und ETF-Token bergen ein erhebliches Risiko und sind nicht für alle Anleger geeignet. Bitte überlegen Sie sich sorgfältig, ob Investments in derartige Finanzinstrumente mit Blick auf Ihre Erfahrung, Risikotoleranz und Finanzlage für Sie geeignet sind. Beachten Sie die geltenden Beschränkungen und Zulassungsvoraussetzungen.
Hey, as I mentioned before, you can hear Diana Moskovitz read her piece, There Will Never Be Another WTF with Marc Maron, with a full Maron subscription. You can listen to it on last Friday's bonus show with Brendan and Chris.
It almost made me feel like being caught by a detective.
I bet. That's exactly what I was thinking. I was thinking of the end of The Usual Suspects.
Yes.
Like she figured it all out. She picked up every clue.
I was totally the snowman. I was like, I gave you all the clues. And yes, she got them all.
How do you feel? Like, how do you feel being seen? Like,
that was the most humbling and emotional takeaway from it for me was I was like, man, it wasn't hidden. Like, yeah. I was okay with it being hidden.
Right. As an inside joke, something only for you.
But it was validating to me that if someone was astute enough and was paying attention in the way, and as she was, as devoted to the show as a part of her life as she was, she was able to pick all that stuff up. And look, you know, the guests are important and the show is about humanity and people. And I loved her way of putting it. It's like, this is the story of a guy trying to get his shit together. And that's exactly how I've always seen it. But like I always had in the back thought of my head, I was like, well, this thing works because, you know, whatever growth you want to talk about with Mark, one of the things he never really had to grow about was his relationship with me.
Yeah.
He has been an above board, excellent partner from the day we started working together. And it never fucking changed. It is the most consistent thing in the 16 years of this show is the way we have worked together. And that's not a fucking lie. That is not exaggeration. That is not like in any way me trying to look at something in hindsight. That has been the way it's been since the start. And it's just like, I can't believe somebody else got that.
To sign up for the full Maron, go to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. All right.
Boomer lives. Monkey and La Fonda, cat angels everywhere.